Today on the 21st. He's known as the Lion of Zimbabwe. For decades, Thomas Mpfumo has been speaking truth to political power through his music. He's been in exile for 13 years, and even now, some of his music is banned in Zimbabwe.
The people who are leaders in this world, they are very corrupt. And this music is just like, the voice of the voiceless.
Today, we'll talk with this legendary musician about his life and how he sees the world ahead of his Illinois tour. But first, we speak with two rabbis and an imam about bringing Christians, Muslims, and Jewish people together over Seder dinners across the state. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. There's corruption. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Passover begins on Monday evening. The holiday is marked by a Seder dinner that serves as a celebration of identity and commemorates the liberation of the Israelites from slavery in ancient Egypt. It also can be a time for establishing interfaith bonds, which is what Champaign Rabbi Alan Cook and members of the Sinai Temple will be doing tonight during their interfaith community Seder. They'll be welcoming members of the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center and the First Mennonite Church in Urbana. Rabbi Cook joins me now in studio with Imam Usman Sawadogo from CIMIC to talk about tonight's event, as well as the importance of establishing strong interfaith ties in the local community. Rabbi Imam, welcome. Thanks for being back with us here on the 21st.
Thank you for having us.
Also joining us on the line from Highland Park is Rabbi Evan Moffick from Congregation Solal. He'll be leading an interfaith Seder at North Park University this coming Wednesday. Rabbi Moffick, welcome back to the 21st. It's great to have you on the line as well.
Thank you, Nyla, and honored to be with my colleagues as well.
Rabbi Cook, could you start by describing to us the importance of a Passover Seder in the dinner?
Certainly. So the Passover Seder is a way of commemorating the Passover experience. And we are actually told in the Haggadah, which is the ritual book used during the Seder experience, that every person is obligated to view himself or herself as if each of us personally were experiencing the Exodus. Traditionally, we think of that Exodus as being an Exodus from Egypt, but Egypt may or may not be the geographic location, the political location that we know nowadays. The Hebrew word used in the Haggadah for Egypt is Mitzrayim, which the rabbis explain could be a play on words for a Hebrew phrase meaning a narrow place. So all of us come from a place of constriction. All of us have known those kinds of boundaries in our lives that kind of keep us in and hold us in and restrict us from being our best selves. And so the Seder also helps us to break free from that in a sense and to celebrate what we can be and to celebrate our potential.
Rabbi Moffick, why is this a good opportunity for an interfaith celebration? Why is it important for you? Why is this an important opportunity for an interfaith exchange?
Because of the message at Passover. Passover is about redemption. It's about freedom. It's about, as Rabbi Cook just said, leaving those narrow straits that constrict us both in our minds and in our world, internally and externally. And it's also about our belief in a God who is on the side of the oppressed, a God who cares about those who are in prison, those who are suffering, those in need. And this is a shared concern of every religion. And so this message of Passover, it may have started with ancient Israel, but it's a message that's been heard for thousands of years by people of all faiths. So to celebrate that message at this moment is extraordinary.
Imam, I understand this will be the first Passover Seder that you're going to be attending this evening with Rabbi Cook and also Pastor Crosby. What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, for me, I'm looking forward to a wonderful experience to be part of celebrating a victory of liberation, freedom over oppression. And it's very interesting for me because in our tradition, we read that when Muhammad the Prophet first moved to Medina, he found the Jewish community of Medina celebrating the liberation from Egypt, and he joined them in the celebration by fasting. And I was, when I read this story, I saw that it was Yom Kippur, but as Rabbi Allen explained, for me, my mind is going to Passover, and so this will be great for me to join this celebration. And also, it is an example of how faith communities can come together and celebrate victory of freedom and victory of justice over oppression and slavery.
Rabbi Cook, why was it important for you to invite Imam Sawadogo and also Pastor Michael Crosby to this Interfaith Seder you're hosting this evening?
Well, I think that the importance to me was twofold. Number one, it's been a great honor to become involved in interfaith activities within the community and to build strong relationships between particularly our three congregations. And some of that, actually, Nyla, you can take credit for, because we've been in studio together with you a number of times building the importance of interfaith dialogue within our communities. But I also think, you know, it is significant for us as three Abrahamic faiths, all of whom have known oppression at different times. I've learned from Pastor Crosby a lot about the history of the Mennonites in Europe, and their journey echoes in many ways the oppression that Jews have known over time, the oppression that Muslims have known over time. And we've talked in here before in conversations with you and in conversations about our project about the tendency in 21st century America towards a sense of otherness and a sense of fearing the other. And bringing together and showing that we have, as the Imam lifted up and as Rabbi Mafik lifted up, these shared narratives that really do strongly parallel one another, I think can help us build bridges, because we can understand, when we look one another in the eye, we can understand that we all are cut from a similar cloth and that we all have these similar narratives.
Rabbi Mafik, you're leading an Interfaith Seder at North Park University next week. What's the plan? Who's invited to that event?
It's students, mostly, and these are students at, it's a Christian seminary, really a covenant, evangelical covenant, and it's actually they're a group. The North Park was started by Swedish immigrants to Chicago in the late 19th century, and it's a wonderful school, and I've become connected with them because a man from Minnesota who identifies with that denomination actually donated a Torah scroll to the school, and I was invited to help participate in this dedication ceremony, and I struck up some friendships with some of the professors, and they invited me to come. And these are students who are going to be future leaders of churches across the country. And for them to have an experience of Passover, to know the story of Passover, I think not only enhances their own education, but is also something that can build closer ties with the Jewish community. And many of them serve in pulpits where there really isn't much of a Jewish community. So this may be one of the rare exposures to this traditional ritual.
Rabbi Mafik, I think I mentioned you wrote a book a couple of years ago, and it's called What Every Christian Needs to Know About Passover. It was so interesting to me to hear the Imam talk about his experience in the Islamic faith tradition, and sort of even thinking about the prophet and his experience with the Seder. I wonder, for Christians, what do you think are the important things that Christians need to know about Passover? Because I think everyone kind of has their Ten Commandments, maybe TV version of Passover that perhaps a lot of Americans know. But particularly for Christians, what messages do you think are important?
Well, I think the most important message, and I'd say this is probably for Jews and Christians and Muslims, is actually something that Rabbi Cook mentioned earlier. And that is that on Passover, we are meant not only to tell the story of the ancient Israelites who were slaves, but we are to imagine that we ourselves were slaves and that God is freeing us from Egypt. So the Passover isn't just something that happened in the past. It's something that's happening now, and we're essentially recreating it. So it's not just a history lesson. It's almost like a drama that we are experiencing. And what that does then is help us understand where people feel oppression today and how we can be agents of ensuring their freedom. And so this is something for Jews, Christians, Muslims, any caring person. And on a strictly religious sense as well, I think one of the great messages of Passover is what a powerful ritual it is. You know, from a sort of religious anthropological point of view, here is a ritual that has a story, you know, this beautiful story of freedom. It has foods. It has smells. It has, every sense is touched. We hear the story. We smell the gefilte fish and the matzo ball soup. We taste the matzah. We touch the matzah and feel it. So it's an experientially powerful night. So it conveys a religious message in a very concrete way, and I think that's meaningful for all people of faith.
You know, and as we think about this, we have had such an unfortunate series of hate crimes that we've seen in the past just this year, whether we're talking about, I'm thinking about all of the horrible incidents involving, I'm thinking about the Jewish cemetery near St. Louis, what we've seen with synagogues and mosques and hate crimes that we've seen so much of in the past couple of months, in Chicago, not necessarily in central Illinois. Rabbi Cook, I just wanted to ask you and Imam Osman, like, you think about the current climate, how important is it, especially now, for you to be feeling? I imagine both of you have been in contact because both of you have told me how much expressions of support you've gotten from the community. Are both of you also more in contact with each other now? Fortunately, there haven't been any events that we've seen reported in central Illinois with your congregations. But what has that relationship been like for you guys the past couple of months?
For me, it's been very powerful to know that we have this strong support in the broader religious community, and particularly to build strong relationships with CIMIC, both in my capacity as the rabbi of Sinai Temple and in my capacity as the chair of the local Interfaith Alliance, which Imam Usman also sits on our board. It has been important to decry these things that are happening within our country. It's been important to decry other national and international tragedies. Incredibly saddened by the crisis going on in Syria right now. And I think that there are parallels that we can bring out in our service tomorrow night to express our solidarity and our concern for the Syrians and for other refugee communities around the world. And I think that, again, if we can see all of these stories as similar, rather than isolating others into silos and saying that's not a concern because they are not part of my faith group or part of my culture. And that is something that I think particularly in my relationships with Pastor Crosby and my relationship with Imam Usman, that we have been willing to see one another as individuals and not put each other in boxes and to reach out to one another and embrace one another in our times of need.
Yeah, Imam, I wonder what you would say to add to that as well.
Yeah, I would say that I see the importance of being together in the interfaith. And when you look at what is happening now, the few incident hate crimes that happened, I would not say that this brought us closer, because I believe that since we first met, and the idea was how we can work together and bring our two communities together, we were close. But I think that this made us more aware of the danger of hate crimes, and this will lead us to work more, to make more effort to stand against this hate crimes. And this is what makes the NTFF Seder very important. And as it was mentioned before, is not celebrating something in the past. And Pastor Rabbi Allen mentioned something that I really like, that they look at Egypt not like a place, but Egypt can be anywhere. And freedom from slavery and freedom from injustice is not something that we celebrate in the past. It's something that we have to live now and join effort to work against injustice or slavery. So I always say that this makes us more aware of the amount of work we have to do.
The event this evening, is that open to the... it sounds like you guys... It looks like you're already full. I see a look on your face, Rabbi Cook.
I wish that I could say that we were open, but I'm worried about what the fire marshals might say and what the wonderful volunteers I have cooking in the kitchen would say. If you are a member of one of our three congregations and you have not had a chance to RSVP, you can show up and we'll do our best to squeeze you in.
That's a good answer.
But, you know, we are so blessed to have had a wonderful, wonderful response to this, and we are expecting a very full house.
Okay. And Rabbi Mofik, we will tweet out the information about your event at North Park University. I'm not sure if that's open, but there's lots of different interfaith seders that are going on throughout Illinois. So we'll have all of that information available at our website at the21stshow.org. I want to thank Rabbi Mofik, Rabbi Cook, Imam Sawadogo for joining me. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here with
me. Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you for having us, and thank you.
Thanks, Nyla.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thomas Mpfumo is a Zimbabwean artist who speaks to political power, so much so that his music has caused him to be imprisoned. That was during colonial rule. And when President Robert Mugabe took over, Mpfumo continued to speak truth to power. Some of his music is still banned in Zimbabwe. He now lives in exile in Oregon. But he's here in Illinois on tour. He's playing in Chicago tomorrow night and in Champaign next week. I'm joined on the line now by Thomas Mpfumo. Also joining us is Mose Chikawero. He's a professor of African history at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's just written a book. It's called African Music, Power and Being, Colonial Zimbabwe. And he's going to be on tour with Thomas as well. Thomas, Moza, welcome to the 21st. Thanks so much for being with me.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much, Nyla.
Thomas, can I ask, you have been living in self-imposed exile for a dozen years or so. I wonder, does it ever get easier?
Well, you know, they always say, home sweet home, okay? You always think of your home where you are coming from. I'm a Zimbabwean and I'm a citizen of Zimbabwe, so I miss, a lot of things back home, a lot of, my fans, my friends, and the rest of the people that I know.
Yeah. And I wonder, though, how much of that, too, how much you think music helps connect us to people or places that maybe we aren't physically close to anymore?
Well, musically, I think I'm in touch with a lot of people because they listen to my music. But at the same time, you know, I do miss them because I'm not with them. I'm in another country. I've been living here in America since 2004, and I miss my home. Although I don't regret being here because also. If you want to be a good musician, this is the place to be. Mm-hmm. I meet a lot of different musicians from different countries. To me, that's okay. But I still miss my people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Professor Chikawero, if I could ask you, can you even remember the first time you heard Thomas's music?
This is difficult. Because I was born in the 1970s. By that time, Mapfumo had already started singing. A lot of his music was already driving the liberation struggle. And so you are born into that kind of context
mm-hmm.
where you cannot really place a timeline as to when you first began to hear somebody. And so that's a bit difficult. So to me, people like Thomas Mapfumo have always been there. We were born into their music. And so I can't quite say when.
Yeah, I imagine that would be true for many Zimbabweans, especially your age, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
correct, yeah.
Yeah. Thomas, you know, you grew up in a time under colonial rule, and I'm thinking of your early music. In Shona, itself a political act, singing in a Bantu language. I wonder if you can explain what it felt like for you to have your culture repressed by a government.
Well, it's such a sad story. Talking about culture, we have lost our culture. And it's something that that is disturbing me. It's like most of our people now are westernized, and we have lost a lot. We don't have a culture now.
Mm.
You understand?
Sure. Yeah. And when you say westernized,
we don't have a culture now. I don't know where we belong right now because we are not ourselves.
And when you say we, you mean Zimbabweans? Do you mean in particular?
Zimbabweans, yes.
Mm-hmm. What part of culture, I mean, when you think about that and you think about Zimbabwe, what part of your culture do you feel like is the most important thing that's been lost?
Every part of our culture. Every part of our culture, you know. Yeah, you believe some people here, we have our own way of saying prayers to our God. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame, anything about Christianity, but at the same time, Christianity has destroyed our culture. We believe in things that we don't understand, and when you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Yeah, if you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. That's what is happening today. That's why the Zimbabweans are suffering, because they lost their culture.
Mm. Thomas, do you think that is happening here in the U.S. also?
It's like, the world is so divided today. There's no oneness in this world today. You understand? It's each man for himself and God for us all. That's not the way we should live. This is supposed to be a united world where people of all races should unite. And there's no more love amongst our people. love has gone out through the window. And the world is such a miserable place to stay in today. We have all these wars that are going on, religion, people, they believe in what they believe, and others say, no, this is wrong, this is satanic, you don't have to believe in that, you have to believe in what we believe. You don't do that to people. People believe in what they believe. Where they're coming from. For instance, if you take the Chinese, they believe in Buddha. And you can't blame them. We don't know Buddha. We don't know who Buddha is. And some people believe in Muhammad. We don't know who Muhammad is. So we differ, but God is one. In the eyes of God, we are just as one. And God is one. There are never two gods. There's only one God, the Almighty. And if you have a garden of flowers, you can't have a garden of flowers of one color. It has to be a garden of many colors, of flowers of many colors. You understand?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I think about how much your music is a reflection of that. I wonder, as you think about now, what role you think music can play in bringing hope to people?
I think every musician who is political minded has been doing what I'm doing. Like we had Bob Marley, we had Peter Tosh, we had Van Wilder, we had the rest of other musicians who were, fighting for human rights. But it's not helping at all. It's not helping at all because there is so much corruption in this world. You understand? The people who are leading who are leaders in this world, they are very corrupt.
Well, and when you think about that, when you say that, when people listen to your music now, and I think about what you have been singing about for your whole life for decades, how do you want young people to think about and respond to your music now?
Yeah, well, I think my music appeals to everyone. To the young generation and older generation. So the music is there to speak for itself. And this music is just like, the voice of the voiceless. There is a lot of music going on today. There's hip-hop. There's the old music, and we are from the old school.
Yeah. Do you think hip-hop represents the voice of the voiceless?
Yeah. They do. There are some youngsters who are trying to do the same thing that we are doing. But it's like it's falling on deaf ears. People don't listen. And people don't want to listen to that. They want you to listen to what they are doing, the wrong things they are doing. They want us to do the same thing, so we don't want to do that. I'm appealing to the rest of the youngsters in this world that they should unite the world. The youth of the world should be able to unite the world because the elderly people have failed. They have failed. So it's the duty of the youth of today to unite the world, to make it a peaceful world. Something, they have to bring love back to the people. People must love one another. This is no time for hatred. It's time to move forward with love. We have to to think about love first. Put love first before you do anything. Think about love.
Yeah, the question I just wanted to ask you, Professor, I think your research is so interesting. I know in part you've looked at the role technology, things like electricity or radio play in our social history. I used to live in Haiti, and I think it's hard to explain to people who are not from there the role, for example, Haitian radio plays in people's lives. And I wondered if you could explain to people how important you think technology, radio, music is as a method of communication in countries like Zimbabwe.
It is actually fundamental, as you've been grappling with to explain to people. So one of my research projects is actually on radio. My third book project is on the history of broadcasting in Southern Africa. And I look at the three country case studies of colonial Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. So music, radio has always been at the heart of communication. But again, what I do is I historicize the idea of broadcasting and the idea of radio prior to radio. Because the idea of broadcasting has always been with people. It has always been available in African cultures. So music is actually one way of communication. It's a way of broadcasting messages. Broadcasting basically meaning casting messages widely in space and in time, but also spiritually. So you can think about the radio as something that came recently. But there have been other forms of broadcasting before radio. But so it's a question of changing technologies in a historical trajectory. Because if you can think about during the liberation struggle, for example, radio systems that guerrillas were using fighting in the jungles, in the forest, were not exactly operating conventionally. They were regarded as pirate radio stations. So these are Africans, Zimbabweans, other Africans who took this new invention and repurposed it because they did not have a voice, a space on colonial radio. So they had actually to use underground guerrilla radio communication systems. But beyond radio itself, they also had to use other forms of communication, like visual, because I remember growing up in rural Zimbabwe, herding cattle. So you'd climb anthills, small mountains to communicate messages. Somebody sees you. It communicates a particular kind of message. Mm-hmm. If you're making a gesture by hand, if you light a fire and make smoke, you're actually sending messages. If you beat a drum in a certain way, you're actually broadcasting a particular kind of message. So in situations where radio itself is controlled by the state, there are other ways of broadcasting that are unconventional, that are unobvious. So my work looks at both the conventional but also the unconventional. So even the idea of technology itself has always been with every culture. It's not something that comes from elsewhere, say from the Western world, because there have always been technologies of communication even in African cultures before colonization.
We're talking with Zimbabwean musician Thomas Mapfumo along with University of California Santa Barbara professor Moza Chikawero. We'll continue this conversation after a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Nyla Budu, and this is The 21st. listening to The 21st, I'm Nyla Budu. That is the music of the legendary Zimbabwean musician Thomas Mpfumo. He's performing in Chicago tomorrow night and in Champaign next week. We'll be tweeting out all of those details if you follow 21ST Show for that. It'll also be at our website, 21stshow.org. We're also joined by University of California, Santa Barbara professor Moza Chikawero. He teaches African history there. He's the author, most recently, of African Music, Power and Being. He's accompanying Thomas on this tour to help educate people on the role of music in Zimbabwe's history. Professor, your book, it's really about how African music itself has been a domain of struggle. How do you think Thomas Mpfumo fits into all of this?
Well, Thomas Mpfumo becomes the kind of culmination, a climax of these sensibilities and movements, because a lot of writers have kind of told us that Chimurenga music, which is the music that Thomas Mpfumo is known for, is something that came with the liberation struggle in the 1960s and 70s. So what my book argues that it actually historicizes this sensibility as something that has always been with us as Zimbabweans, as Africans. You can think about the first wave of wars of anti-colonial occupation from the 1600s, for example. This is when Murenga, Soror and Zou, lived. This is the guy who was a war hero, who was a nation builder. He fought using guerrilla tactics against the Portuguese who tried to colonize Zimbabwe in the 1600s. And so this is where the idea of Chimurenga comes from. In the 1890s, Zimbabweans had to fight another war against the British in the so-called First Chimurenga. So the 1960s becomes the Second Chimurenga. But the idea itself is much, much deeper. And in the first three chapters of the book, I talk about missionary crusades against African cultures. Even those students were singing from hymns at mission stations. They were using their own languages, which missionaries and the colonial state could not hear, to actually communicate messages of resistance and protest. So there's a deep history and trajectory of this kind of resistance that Thomas Mpfumo and others popularized in the 1960s and 1970s. A lot of the songs that became popular were actually sung decades prior in the first Chimurenga in the wars against colonial occupation. So it's a sensibility that is at the core of Zimbabwean and other African identities.
Professor, I wonder, as you're touring with Thomas as he performs around the country, as you're listening to what he's saying right now, what has this experience been like for you?
Right. I'm touring with him now. I've actually done quite a couple of events before this particular tour with him. And I've also done a bit of the same thing in Southern Africa, in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
So what this experience means to me is that the idea behind the tour is that we are constructing all these voices from different dimensions to contribute to the dialogue that Thomas is talking about, to contribute ideas about what it means as, to us as Africans, to talk about our own cultures, to talk about our own histories. I'm a writer, I'm a scholar. Mpfumo is a musician. Their audiences, they are also, if you think about the African concept of the dare, everyone is represented in that circle of knowledge, production, and transaction. So when you engage with issues in the African historical African context, this is the kind of space that we're traveling with. This is the concept. So it means everyone has got to participate, everyone has a voice.
Yeah.
So we're participating differently from different dimensions, but actually bringing up the very same kinds of issues.
Well, it's so interesting to hear you say that, because I wonder what you think Americans, what we can learn from this, from what you have been doing.
Right, because, again, we tend to think about music as just music. Music is just fun. Music is just entertainment. It is fun, it is entertainment, but it is also history. It is also what I call intellection, a way to bring up ideas and digest them together. So this is a particularly African, but also other cultures also share ideas in similar
cycles. Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to establish dialogue, but also to raise African voices on African histories, on African issues. Because a lot of African history, African music, African cultures tend to be misrepresented by outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to contribute to a corrective, but also bring a conversation with other people from different cultures. So the idea of performing at universities, at popular community spaces, builds into this larger transcultural, transnational dialogue, which is also something that the music itself is built on. If you think about the music of Louis Armstrong, for example, he has a song that is called Skokian that I talk about in Chapter 7 of the book. That song was actually composed by a Zimbabwean in the 1940s. And Louis Armstrong plus over 100 other musicians globally did renditions of the same song. And so the music itself has already been a transcending space, if you think about it. So what we're doing here is not really inventing the wheel, but to build on these histories and the legacies and to show that actually, no, the conversation that Mapfumo is talking about, that we should unite the world, it's the duty of young people to actually carry on the conversation. There is a history to that. And also, if you think about the contribution of the music to the liberation struggle in Zimbabwe and Africa, his music was so inspirational. It mobilized people to fight injustice, and it's doing the same kind of thing. So in America today, there are issues that are peculiar, but also which are common to other cultures, political issues, social issues that people should be engaging. So music helps in terms of articulating the very same issues as Mapfumo is suggesting.
Mm-hmm. So were you a big fan of the, I know you're a big fan of the group Chicago from a long, long time ago, right?
Yes.
But we're not going to hear any of that music in the next couple of days when you're performing in Illinois, are we?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, but I still want to listen to those guys.
Yeah. So when you, I can't imagine, Thomas, what it's like when you think about performing. How do you decide what to play?
I just make a choice of some songs. There are some certain songs that I don't want to play, and there are some songs that I just want to play. So I don't even make a program when I go on the stage. I have to make a pick on some certain songs that have that message, you know, the important message. And those are the songs that I always play, though there are some songs, I have very few love songs. Like, I mean, bedroom love and things like that. But most of my songs are political.
Can I ask you to make a pick for us now? If you were going to pick a song, what song should we play?
Well, you got Danger Zone?
Yeah, sure. We'll find it and we'll play that. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you.
No, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
See you.
And there you have it. That's Danger Zone by Thomas Mapfumo. Again, he's performing in Chicago tomorrow night and in Champaign this coming Wednesday. We've got all the details online if you check us out there. That does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. And hey, if you have Alexa, we're easy to find. Tell her, ask NPR One to play The 21st. All of those links, directions for Alexa, every other way to contact us via phone, email, or social media is all at our website, 21stshow.org. You've heard me reference our Twitter handle a couple times. If you follow us on Twitter, search for 21stshow. We've live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. And when we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest in Illinois news. On our Facebook page, search for The 21st to like us. You can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. We're produced by Christine Herman and Ellen Montesilio. Abrar Alhiti is our intern. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.